A Podshape production.
Jorn Jesper Jensen was a 6'3" gentle giant. He emigrated from Denmark as a 17-year-old, straight off the boat to Scarborough in Western Australia. He was a loving father to his two precious daughters, a granddad to his grandkids, a keen golfer, a great mate, and an adoring husband. Then, on one morning in June 2017, he opened his garage door and drove his car an hour and 17 minutes away. It disappeared forever. Or did he? This is Dad Is Gone.
He was a goofy dad, you know. He did all these little funny jokes, and as a little kid, I thought they were hilarious.
Linda Willemer and her husband Darren dropped her father, Jorn Jensen, home on Sunday after a family lunch. They say he was in good spirits, but the 68-year-old has disappeared without a trace.
At no time has he indicated suicidal tendencies. That fall has never sat well with me, I'll be honest.
Well, the discovery of Jorn Jensen's car outside the Lancelin Beach Hotel is a big breakthrough in the police search for the missing Ocean Reef grandfather.
Look, he did have a bit of depression, and I put the light on and then I just saw blood. All these blood footprints, pretty much what it was very in your face then, and there was quite a lot of blood, and I was like, what the hell has happened here? And I yelled out, and I think he was murdered. No, I 100%, hand on my heart, believe he was murdered, because this is my dad. This is my story. This is what happened.
I first heard about the case of a missing man, Jorn Jesper Jensen, on a Facebook page that deals with long-term missing persons. It's called Leave a Light On. I was interested in his story as Jesper went missing in the same beachside town that I grew up in. The town is Lancelin on the west coast of Australia. It's a crayfishing town that's famous for strong winds, a big surf break, and a relaxed and laid-back vibe. The story of Jesper's disappearance and the turmoil it creates inside one family is heartbreaking. Jorn had two daughters. His youngest is Belinda, or Belle. I connected with Belle on Facebook, and she was nervous about talking with me, as her dad's disappearance has caused a great amount of stress and anxiety on her family since 2017.
My dad was born in Lemvig in Denmark back in 1948, and he was one of three children. He had an older brother and he had a younger sister. He decided to go into the army at the age of 17, and then after that an opportunity came up to jump on a boat and go to Australia. And for him, that was a great opportunity to start fresh. And he basically ended up in Perth, had no idea which suburb he was going to end up in, and, randomly just put his finger on a map and ended up in Scarborough, which is just one of the coastal suburbs.
And so did he come over by himself on that boat, or was he with family?
He was by himself.
Wow. At 17, that's a big, massive decision to make, isn't it?
It is. It is, yeah.
Did that sort of follow him through his life? Was he always that sort of guy that would make those sorts of decisions and go, you know what, I'm going to go and travel to the other side of the world by boat?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was a strong man determined to make a good life for himself, and that's the way he thought he'd do it. So, and that's the way he sort of lived his life, and he was a very strong, determined man. So,
that other voice you hear is Darren, Belle's husband. Darren's been Belle's rock since her dad disappeared. Not only has he been there to help her through this difficult time, but they've forged an even stronger bond in the search for answers about Belle's dad. Belle remembers the stories her mum and dad told the girls of how they first met in Perth.
Again, when he ended up randomly selecting Scarborough, that was the suburb that he ran into my mum, and you know, they instantly fell in love. She was this little pint-sized pocket rocket, and she was, you know, referred to as Gidget pretty much, because she's a little surfer chick. And, you know, there's this Dane that sort of my mum meets and falls madly in love with him. You know, tall, 6'3", blonde, blue eyes, you know. She, very quickly, they just fell in love and, got married, and the rest is history from there.
And so that's, I guess, the image of a multicultural young Australia, where you've got a Dane coming over, big, tall, good-looking gentleman, and your mum, an Aussie, living in Perth. She meets... All he was really missing was the surfboard, right?
That's exactly right. Exactly. That's exactly right. But that's actually quite funny you mentioned that, because I remember going through photos and... His mum was a big surfer, and looking at all the photos from the early days, and because mum was just so in awe of him, 90% of the photos were of my dad, and with no shirt on and tanned, and there's a photo of him holding her surfboard all proud, and they had a really special bond.
And so, how many kids did they have?
They got married in November 1977, and they had their first child in 1979, so didn't wait too long. my dad's dingo was his first baby. He had a dingo called Luke, and that was his first baby. But then when we came along, we were his world, and then I came on 13 months later, so they didn't muck around.
How close to your sister were you?
Oh, in the early days, we were really close.
I guess she was your big sister, so went to school together. What sort of things would you do together as a big sister? This obviously part's hard for you to talk about your sister right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, honestly, the memories from when we were younger, they're fantastic, but yeah. Obviously, over time, our relationship has become strained, so it is a bit difficult to talk about now. I think with everything, I'll be honest, since everything else has happened, I've sort of put a lot of those memories sort of behind me because of what's happened over the last sort of 3 years. It's very difficult to sort of try and bring those memories back in after what's happened.
It's difficult for Belle to talk about her relationship with her sister. As she said, it's been strained since the disappearance of their dad. In fact, across this podcast, we won't mention her sister's name. And I want to create more tension inside what is a family that has been torn apart. What we do want to do is try to shine a light on John Jensen's disappearance, a light that might find an answer for both of his daughters.
I was very close to both of my parents. Everyone used to say I was so much like my mum, in a way that, very similar personalities, and, I was very, very close to her, but definitely connected to my dad's hip. we did everything together. We would go for walks, and he just loved going, when we lived over in Tassie, did a lot of sort of bushwalking, and we went and bought a Nintendo finally when he finally caved, and we used to love sort of just playing golf together and on the game, and he also played golf, and he cut down a little 5-iron for me, so I'd go around and be his little caddy, and I was never a morning person, so but it was quickly outweighed by just spending time with my dad, and he encouraged me to play piano, and that was a huge part of our sort of time together, because he'd just spend hours listening to me. He'd have his little workout machine, in my piano room, and he'd do his, exercises and stuff while I'm playing, and he took me to every lesson and Rocker Steadfords, and I remember the first Rocker Steadford we went to, I was so nervous, and I learned a song called Walking in Memphis, and that song's pretty special to me. I ended up, I was just, 30th person, I was the last person in that particular Steadford, and when they I basically got highly commended on that, and Dad was just like literally the proudest dad on earth. It was pretty special, and spending those times was just incredible. Very special memories.
It's amazing how music can bring back memories. And something like Walking in Memphis is one of those songs. And so how do you feel now when you hear that song?
Oh, I just break down in tears when I hear that song. Good tears and bad tears. Good. I could be walking around the shops. If it comes on, I'm gone. you know, yeah, music does that. I mean, when it all happened, music was helped me greatly, you know, get through that period, you know. So yeah, one day I'm going to take it up again when all this is over, and hopefully you'll still be able to hear me one day, you know.
Dealing with ambiguous loss is difficult for all of the family in a missing person's case. It's made even more difficult when those family members that are left behind no longer speak. Belle remembers her dad and how he was when she was little.
He was a goofy dad, you know. He did all these little funny jokes, and as a little kid, I thought they were hilarious. You know, now I'm like, oh, the, you know, typical, oh, dad, you know, but especially because he was starting to do it to my son now, you know, because he was 4 when he went missing, and he'd do the same sort of jokes. You know, I'd yawn and he'd put his finger in my mouth. And when we lived in Kingsley, actually, there was a stretch of road, and every time he just used to, you know, shake the car so it basically looked like, and he just convinced me that, no, just that part of road is goes wavy, Bindi, you know. And every time we drove there, it was just hilarious. He never forgot, and he thought it was freaking hilarious. Little things like that, you know. And we'd, you know, have dessert, and we'd get a 2-litre tub of ice cream, and I'd start on one corner and he'd start on the other, and we'd have like spoon fights and stuff like that, and just silly little things like that. But he was, to everyone else, he was very quiet. You know, he was always seen in the front lounge room, you know, sort of keeping to himself. He was happy watching TV, he was happy reading. He loved his books, with the library all the time, read all the time. But he was a sort of very affectionate dad. Like, I'm in a Woodville house, every night I sat on his lap, in his recliner chair, and he'd just tickle my back and we'd just talk, you know, and that was every single night. And then it'd be, oh, okay, it's time for bed now. So I'd go and lay in his bed and we'd just chat. And then we had this thing where he'd just, you know, sort of tickle me on the head when it's like, okay, that was his sign that, Bindi, I'm starting to go off to sleep now, just in case I don't answer you, sort of thing. And, yeah, we did that pretty much every night.
What was your mum like?
It was very, she had an infectious smile and personality that lit up a room. You know, they were sort of different, but they balanced each other out, you know, like, because Dad didn't have to be the social one, because Mum was like this little pocket rocker. You know, she entered a room and it just lit up, you know. She was just the most kindest, generous, and just the best mum in the world. And I've always just said, if I can be half the mum she was, then I've done a good job. Because she, very, very, very beautiful woman.
Belle's husband, Darren, has been by her side during this terrible tragedy. Not only just by her side, but in her corner. Darren recalls the first encounter he had with Jesper, the 6'3" gentle giant.
He was a pretty big fella.
Yeah, 6'3".
Six foot three.
1.61, but he made me look small. He was built like the proverbial brick, you know what? he had a big chest, and so that was, I suppose, quite intimidating at first, being protective of his daughter. But no, he was a gentle giant. He really was in every way. He was quietly spoken, hard-working, just a real stand-up, genuine guy. He was a very typical dad, and I hope I'll be the same way when my daughter brings home someone like myself or whatever, you know what I mean. I hope I would put a bit of a hard word on him and whatever else. But he was a very kind, caring person, and as I said, the love for Belinda was very obvious, and I love Belle very much, and I think that became obvious to him, and especially the time I went around to ask for a hand in marriage, it very much became obvious. Belle went away with her mum and her sister to Bali, and I thought, well, we've been going out for a fair few years now, so now's the time, and I thought this is the perfect time to actually go over and just been able to speak to Jesper on his own. So I knew he drank VB, so I grabbed a six-pack of that, and went around there, and he was there, and he just looked at me like, what are you doing here, sort of thing. And I went, oh, do you mind if we have a chat? And we went in, and I just said, look, I love your daughter very much, and I want to ask for her hand in marriage. And he did put the hard word on me. He's like, are you going to provide for her and all these sort of things? But it was a good conversation. It was that we gained a lot of respect for each other at that time. It was very obvious that how much he cared for Belle, and it was very obvious how much I cared for Belle. And in that moment, we both realised that we were the two men on this world that cared for Belle more than anyone else. So I got permission. It was simple as that. And we had a strong bond since then. It was a relationship built on respect for each other and our love for Belle. So it was a good thing. It was a very fond memory, even though you think going around and doing that is nerve-wracking, and it was at the time. I'm glad I did it, and it's a day that I'll remember forever, because it was very obvious the love that he had for Belle.
Over the past few years, Belle has quit her job to focus solely on her dad's disappearance and trying to find an answer. She's not only a mum to her kids, but she's become a bit of an investigator of everything surrounding her dad's disappearance. In my few conversations with Belle before we sat down to chat, she had sent me lots of theories and suspicions on this case. We're going to explore some of those later in an episode. Belle has also taken time out to spend time with her own kids.
I think you put things into perspective when things like this happen. Very quickly I realised that things weren't tracking like I wanted them to in terms of investigation and everything. So I made a decision pretty much by October that I needed to just quit my job and I needed to focus on my children primarily, make sure I could protect them, and then what I call working on the case. You know, I just told them that mummy's just working from home now, you know, and that way I could sort of talk about the case, you know, with Darren without little ears around, because I was sick of going, get out of this room, you can't hear what I'm talking about, you know. You don't want to talk about horrible things like this, you know. So to them, so yeah, anyway. So I'm not working. I quit my job and just trying to be a plugged in mum. And that's been a blessing in disguise. You know, I think I've got pretty well balanced, happy kids.
Tell me about your kids. How many have you got? What are their names?
I have two beautiful children. A son that's just turned 8. I swear he's like going on 13. No, he's the shift this year, isn't it, Darren? He's just grown up so much, and my dad would be like a mini me. He's a giant child, and he's got the big chest. He's just going to be exactly like his granddad, you know. And when he was younger, he had blonde hair, and my dad used to go, oh, you know, he's got that Nordic look, and he was so proud. He was so proud. I've got a beautiful daughter. She's 5, going on 6, and her name's Chloe. And again, a beautiful little soul. You know, a direct ring of my mum as well. As soon as I see her smile, it's like I see my mum. I see my mum in her. And, they're doing really well. They're smart. They like school. And
there's a video that I saw on Facebook of a young boy playing on a slide. And that's, I'm guessing, your boy?
My son, yes. Oh, it was hard to watch. Like, it took me a while to be able to watch it. And go through them, I'll be honest, especially listening to my dad's voice and that as well. You know, that's been hard.
What are you? Chief of the castle.
But I used to take him over, you know, every weekend, you know, because back then I was still working, and he had a little park down the end of the street, and, you know, we'd do our little walk, you know. Dad would be like, got to get your hat on, and I think there's even in one video clip, oh, your mum didn't bring your hat today and you need to wear your hat. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. But just seeing them walking hand in hand, and it was just something we did every weekend, you know, and that was outside of, you know, having him over for dinner and... very, very, very fond memories. And I just remember, you know, even when he couldn't really talk much, he'd be going, more, more. And, you know, Dad was like, you know, just very involved, plugged in and loved it. Loved it. Did all those funny little jokes that used to do me when I was a little kid. Just goes, I love this age, Bindi. They believe everything you say. You know? And Dad, Jordan just thought it was hilarious.
Does Jordan talk about him now?
He does. He does. He's quite funny because when Dad was still around, you know, Dad sort of taught him how to count to 10 in Danish. And it's something that, you know, I've sort of continued on, and every now and then I'll say it with him. And but he'll just randomly come up to me and he'll just say it almost fluently. You know, he remembers it. He's got fond memories. And obviously he was only 4, so we've talked about it a lot, and, you know, we've dedicated a star that we talk to and when we talk about Grandad and Grammy. And yeah, so there's an element. He knows I'm, you know, I get sad, but I think kids also need to see that you're human too, don't they? So occasionally I'll have a chat with him and I go, Mummy's a bit sad today. Mummy's missing Grandad. And the kids are great. They'll just give me a big hug and you know, they bring you back down to reality. You know, so my kids have had to grow up pretty quickly. But, you know, I think, you know, it hasn't affected them in a way. It just shows that, you know, we're all human and we get through these things, you know. Mummy might be sad, but then she can pick herself up and we'll be fine again, so.
We've established that before June 2017, this was a loving family with a mum and dad and 2 sisters. For John and his wife, life seemed pretty good, living in the seaside suburb of Ocean Reef in Western Australia. And then, on February 10, 2011, that all changed suddenly.
Well, I remember I was just getting ready for work. And I remember the day, obviously, as clear as possible. I remember what I was working on at the time. I was actually working for a fencing company and we had this big job up in Karratha. And I was just getting ready for work and I got a call from my sister. I'm saying that Mum had been missing since the night before. And I just went, what the? Like, instantly, that didn't sit well. I was like, no, what's wrong? What do you mean missing? And they're like, well, they can't find her. You know, he's been walking around the streets. He doesn't know where she's gone. And he's been calling around and he's not with any of the neighbours. And, you know, it was totally out of character. And my heart sunk. My heart sunk immediately. And this was just after I had actually taken a pregnancy test. So I had actually just found out that we were expecting our first baby. And then I get this call. So my mum was, I didn't know what to think. You know, I jumped straight in the car. I knew something was wrong. And even Darren, you know, he's like, this is not, something's not quite right here. And I'm driving around the streets of Ocean Reef. I don't know what I was expecting. I'm looking up alleyways. I don't know if she'd passed out or something. And I don't know. I was just hoping to see her somewhere there. But anyway, I drove around Ocean Reef and she wasn't there. And as soon as I got in to see Dad, he was just in a state of, like, you could tell he hadn't slept all night. And he's like, Bindi, I don't know where she is. And I just said, what happened? Like, what happened? And he goes, well, we had an awesome roast dinner because I had that roast chicken, you know, once a week. And he goes, Mum was a happy as. You know, she finished dinner and she was happy because I actually did the dishes, so as in Dad. And so Dad did the dishes and then he goes, she just went and jumped on the computer, which is what she normally did. And then my heart just sunk and I was like, I just ran straight out into the back room where the computer was. And there she was. And I just remember yelling out, Mum. And he came running, he goes, oh shit, this can't be good. And the way she'd fallen down, like, I did the worst thing you could possibly do in that situation. And I tried to pull her back and, like, her face was just black and blue because the way she'd sort of fallen down. She'd been dead since the night before, so she'd obviously fallen off the computer and fallen off the chair, and the way she'd fallen down, just Dad didn't see her. I mean, she was just so little and she was just sort of tucked in there, and I shouldn't have done that because as I pulled it back and saw her face, that's when Dad came and he saw that too. And we're like, okay, I've got to call the ambulance. And I did that and yeah, sat in the front lounge room while we waited for them to come. And, you know, we knew she was gone by that point. Yeah, my world changed out forever. That was, totally not expected, because she'd just come over to my house not long earlier and was borrowing my computer, because she actually had a pretty old, crappy computer that only could play a couple of games on it, like Mahjong and what have you, and she wanted to print something out for her upcoming holiday, and which I'm glad she did, because that was the last time I saw her, and then she gave me a kiss on the head and went home, and we always said love you to each other every time we saw each other, so at least, you know, I got that final love you. Our world changed. Our world changed after that.
Was it a heart attack that she'd had?
It was a heart attack, yeah.
And she was otherwise healthy?
Yeah, she was. I mean, she'd had this silly cough or something that, I don't know what it was related to. Apparently it was like it was an enlarged heart or something. But the thing that's I never really understood is, and I only found it afterwards, because Mum actually used to work up at, she was a clerk up at Joondalup Hospital. And apparently she had pains up her arm, and they'd even put her on an ECG that day or around that time. And but nothing was actually picked up.
How did it affect your dad?
Well, Dad, like any normal human being, he had to deal with the shock, and he had to deal with, the realization that the love of his life wasn't going to be there anymore, you know. But he had his daughters, and you know, I made sure that from that second that it sort of happened, I was around him, you know, almost 24/7, and we got to grieve. We got to talk about memories. We got to, you know, there was a finality to it. We got to, because you got that whole week where you're planning the funeral, and it's a process that is important to go through when you lose someone, and that's what I'm missing now. You know, I still haven't been out of grief. You know, and I knew for the funeral that I'd be the one doing the eulogy. There was no ifs, buts or maybes. That was just going to be me, and I wanted to do that. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done, but also the most rewarding. You know, I felt like I could give my mum the respect that she deserves, you know, and there was a huge turnout because obviously she was a very loved woman. You know, and it was a shock. I mean, even at the time, I didn't realise that she'd actually had a wedding. She was supposed to go to a wedding. This might have been the day after or something like that, I think. And I remember sitting outside with Dad, and then all of a sudden her friends rock up in a car, happy as, you know, they're getting all ready to go to a wedding and to pick Mum up. And I just looked at them and I went, it's the first time I had to tell someone that she's dead. And they just, you felt horrible because they're about to go to a wedding. And, you know, they didn't end up telling the bride that day, obviously, why Mum wasn't there. You know, but things like that, you know, you don't think, you don't always think straight in those sort of times. But we had each other. We were there for each other.
How was your dad's mental health after your mum's passing?
He was fine. He was fine. I mean, he was actually supposed to go to South Africa pretty much 3 weeks. And now he was flying out on Mum's birthday. And Mum was so excited because she was going to have like this extended birthday, you know, flying around. And, you know, it was a big thing. And pretty much straight away it was like, no, you're going, Dad. I'm not letting you not go to this holiday, you know. And I said, I'm going to go with you. And the best thing I've ever done, you know. I've got the most amazing memories and the most amazing friendships from that particular holiday. And it was so early that, you know, I was the one that was crying. You know, he was consoling me. He was like my rock. And yes, he was sad. He was sad, but, you know, we got through it together and we were there for each other. And to spend 2 solid weeks, and I'm talking 2 solid weeks with each other, was probably the best therapy anyone could ever ask for. And now, thank God, I've got all those photos. I mean, you see him standing up on Table Mountain, you know, because we went and got tattoos. When Mum died, you know, Mum was, you know, forever young, because he got Jerry Mum's name, like, proud as, you know, and he coped, you know. It brought him out of his shell in a way, because he was the man that was quiet, you know. He left all the socialising to Mum, and everyone will admit that. Everyone knows it, you know, Mum was this little, you know, socialite. So it actually enabled him to come out of his shell and to... He hadn't had as many... He had so many friends. It actually opened up his world, and I was so proud of him. I was really, really proud of him.
Darren, how was this whole time for you? Obviously, supporting Belle.
It's difficult to watch, and it was a big loss. It was a big loss. And out of Jesper and Jerry, she was the socialite. She was the pocket rocket. She did all the talking. So it was very much a shock to the system. No one was expecting it, which made it worse. But as Belle said before, there was a finality to it. There was a burial and we knew what happened. So there was a grieving process, which they went through, but they handled it with flying colours. I couldn't be any more proud of both of them. Sorry. But I'm glad they got to spend those couple of weeks together in South Africa, because I think it really was healing for both of them, because Belle and her dad were very close. So to spend that time together, I know it helped Belle immensely, and I know it would have helped Jesper immensely. And I know it's something that Belle will remember till she goes to her grave, sort of thing.
In the next episode of Dad's Gone.
Look, he did have... It did cause a bit of depression. Lucky I'm not the suicidal type. You know, I've got time on my side. At no time has he indicated suicidal tendencies. Look, that's a weird one. That fall has never sat well with me, I'll be honest.
Well, thinking about it now, we don't know if that was a fall or not, or if something else happened on that day.
I saw a text message from my sister saying, can you go check on Dad? You know, the neighbour saying that his garage door's been up and his car's gone. I looked at Darren and gone, is this going to happen all over again? Like, immediately, having gone through it with Mum, you think the worst, don't you? And I put the light on and then I just saw blood. All these blood footprints. There was quite a lot of blood and I was like, what the hell has happened here? And I yelled out.
There are over 38,000 long-term missing person cases in Australia, and the story you've just heard is one of them. We want to continue to help bring these emotional stories of ambiguous loss to you so we can spread the word and hopefully get some closure for the families. For as little as the price of a coffee a month, you can help support us to keep creating this content. Just head to our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes.